Welcome back to ENN Radio, a weekly podcast from Elon News Network, bringing you the stories behind the headlines. I'm your host, Mackenzie Wilkes. This week, the homes of Elon University students are feeling the impact of Hurricane Dorian. Elon Community Church takes a controversial step towards inclusion, while support of LGBTQIA students at the university grows. And we get the rundown on how the Elon Phoenix are soaring into tomorrow's football game. Hurricane Dorian has made its way to the Carolina coast. As of Thursday, the storm has a maximum sustained winds of 110 miles per hour. Governor Roy Cooper declared a state of emergency Thursday morning.
Never drive on flooded roads and never drive around a barrier. It's there for your protection. Turn around. Don't drown.
According to the registrar's report, 500 Elon students are from states being impacted by the hurricane. Reporter Brian Ray talked to some of those students. So, Brian, you've been tracking Hurricane Dorian here at Elon News Network. What's the status of the storm right now?
Yeah, so the storm started in the Bahamas, went through the Bahamas, left utter devastation, as one student told me who's from the Bahamas, made its way up the coast of Florida, and it's now headed near Charleston, South Carolina. I believe it's projected to hit there around this evening and then tomorrow. And then it'll eventually work its way up to North Carolina around Friday, and then it'll keep heading up the coast.
So you said you talked to a student from the Bahamas and some students from the states that Hurricane Dorian's going to impact. How are they feeling?
Yeah, so I very briefly talked to a student in the Bahamas who just said that it was utter devastation, and she sent me a link to a GoFundMe that the island is starting to try to get some hurricane relief funds. And then, interestingly enough, the other students I talked to were kind of a mixed bag of emotions. One student from Jacksonville Beach, Florida, so he lives on the beach, no stranger to hurricanes. He was very relaxed about it, wasn't too worried. He said his parents weren't too worried. And he said he missed the camaraderie of preparing for a hurricane when I asked how he was feeling about being away from home, which was kind of interesting. But then another student I talked to from Charleston was very worried about her family. Because during Hurricane Michael in 2018, her house was very severely damaged, and her family did not evacuate for that hurricane. And then in Hurricane Florence, which was also 2018, her grandfather, who had Alzheimer's and dementia, ultimately died because of the stress of evacuating. So she and her family were both very on edge about this hurricane coming.
So do you know what the university specifically is doing to prepare if it is coming towards the Carolinas?
Yes. So our last update from Vice President of Student Life, John Dooley, he said to be aware of localized flooding and downed trees because here at Elon, we could get winds up to 30 miles per hour as Dorian passes through the Carolinas. So beware of downed trees. But he did anticipate no interruption to normal campus operations, and then extended his thoughts to the people whose families live in the path of the storm.
Thanks for the update, Brian.
You're welcome, Mackenzie.
The National Weather Service in Raleigh reports that the winds in Alamance County will be roughly 30 miles per hour, and they expect 0.03 inches of rain for the next several days. An installation outside the Elon Community Church opens the door to inclusion. With me here is Maeve Ashbrook, reporter and evening anchor. Hello, Maeve.
Hi, Mackenzie. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, Maeve, there are doors posted outside the Elon Community Church. Can you tell me what those doors look like and what they say?
So there are six doors in front of the Elon Community Church right on the intersection of Haggard Avenue and Williamson. And like I said, there are six and they are all painted a different color of the rainbow, be that blue, yellow, orange, etc. And the message paint on them says, God's doors are open to all. And there's an exclamation point too, which I think brings a whole other level. If it was a period, it would be a little bit different, but there is an exclamation point. And underneath that message, there is a different religious symbol on every single door. So be that the Star of David or the Eightfold Path. And so the message is basically to be all inclusive. God's doors are open to all. And here's colors of the rainbow to represent our LGBTQIA community and different religious symbols to represent all different religions.
And so you spoke with the senior pastor about these doors and why they put those up there. Can you tell me a little bit about what he said?
Yeah, so the senior pastor, his name is Randy Orig, told me that ECC is an all-affirming, inclusive church. So they are welcoming anyone who is willing to worship whatever they choose.
We are an open and affirming church, which means that we are open to people no matter what their background and no matter what their orientation, race, anything. And so we wanted to find a way to express that openly.
So whoever, whatever that may be, as long as you're going to worship, they welcome you there. And they don't expect you to change. They don't expect you to become a Christian during the Christian worship services or Catholic during Mass. All they want is that you are able to worship with them no matter what your religion is. He said that some churches do expect change. You can come in and worship on the account that you change and conform to whatever their specific religion is. And he just says that they are really welcome to having everybody, especially in this college community.
So they're inviting people of all faiths and sexualities to come join them for service.
Yes.
So I'm curious as to what some of the reactions were from the Elon community about these doors. I assume that some people might find this to be a very controversial thing.
And yes, of course, there are people who are going to dislike things all the time. No one is ever all agreeing or all disagreeing. But Randy Orrick did say most of the reaction has been very positive. He's seen people taking selfies with the doors, taking pictures or just taking pictures of them and posting them on their social media. And we even shared my article on social media, and it has been received pretty well. However, I did talk to an Elon sophomore. His name is Daniel DeRosiak. And all that he said was, yes, the doors are great. They have a great message. They're inclusive. However, people should also be respectful of churches that are not all inclusive and that have stricter rules because, again, not every church is going to be an all-affirming, inclusive church like ECC.
If you're LGBTQIA, if you're one of those members of the community and you want to come in and celebrate Mass with us, you're more than welcome. However, I do sometimes believe, that if you respect some of our more set-in-stone traditions, such as the marriage tradition between a man and a woman.
That's Daniel DeRosiak.
And so he just hopes that people don't take this as something that all churches should do and they still respect churches who still have their strict rules enforced.
Thank you, Maeve.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Elon alumnus Jonathan Chapman started the God's Doors Are Open to All movement at his church in Connecticut. While the town is making inclusive efforts, the university is seeing an increase in LGBTQIA identifying students. And with that growth, support for these students increases. With me here is reporter Emery Eisner. Hi, Emery. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you. So you attended the Welcome Back Dinner for the GLC. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So this was the annual welcome event for the Gender and LGBTQIA Center at Elon. And so it was, there was food provided, but it was mostly just a place for LGBTQIA students to come and meet each other and meet some of the staff at the GLC. There were some guest speakers, including the former director, Matthew Antonio Bosch. So they talked about, you know, what queer life at Elon looks like and how to get more involved on campus. It was just sort of getting more information as well as hanging out with other queer students that maybe new to Elon or maybe coming back.
So can you tell me a little bit about what the GLC does for LGBTQI students on campus?
Yeah, so they have an office in upstairs Mosley, and it's basically a place for queer students to come and hang out or get more information about various topics, or to be able to talk to professionals, either faculty members that work there or student assistants that work there. So if they have any questions about anything related to LGBTQIA issues, they can ask them and get more information about that, or they can just come and hang out. And something that was emphasized by the student assistants that I interviewed was that it's a fun place to come and hang out and just chillax, or it's a place for ally students to come to get more information too. It's not just for LGBT students.
And so I know in your reporting you mentioned that the GLC is growing. Can you tell me a little about how they're growing?
Yes. So since the founding of the GLC in 2013, there has been a huge increase not only in the amount of members of the center, but LGBT students at Elon overall. So the amount of resources necessary to to sort of help support these students has increased as well. So not only are there more students attending Elon that identify as queer, so recently, the most recent statistic on their website is that 5.3% of Elon applicants have self-identified as LGBTQ, which is, of course, the highest number we've seen ever. So rapidly increasing in the actual number of LGBT students at Elon, but also the organization itself has seen an increase in membership, and in with that comes a need for more events, more initiatives, more resources available to them.
And can you tell me a little bit more about what those student workers were telling you about the center itself and those how they're expanding their programming?
Yeah, so I talked to Matthew Reichenbach, who is a senior this year, and he joined when he was a freshman, so he has seen the growth of the organization for a few years now. And so they've already outgrown a lot of their resources already. So for the Mosley remodel coming up, they're going to get a new office, which will be bigger to be able to accommodate their needs. But overall, he has seen an increase in number of resources that they have available. So if you go to their website, you can find more links to more websites with more information. There's been more community outreach. So they were involved with the founding of Alamance Pride. So that was a big deal. And just overall, the availability of having, you know, more students that work there available to help people throughout the day on different days of the week and, you know, just stuff like that.
That's a great initiative. Thank you for coming on the show, Emery.
Thank you for having me.
With me here in the booth is Alex Reynolds, sports director at ENN. How's it going, Alex?
It's going great, Mackenzie. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, tomorrow's home game. It's the opener for football. Who are we playing? When are we playing?
So the Phoenix are taking on the Citadel Bulldogs at 2 p.m. there on Rhodes Stadium, taking on Connie Book's former school.
Oh, that should be a really interesting game. Who's she repping?
I got to think she's repping the Phoenix. I mean, you know, she's our current president. She's got to represent. I'm sure she's got a great booth seat out there in Rhodes Stadium, so I hope she'll be downing the maroon and gold.
We'd love to see it. So last week we played North Carolina A&T. Really close game for the Phoenix. Score was 21-24. Tell us a little bit about it.
Sure, yeah. I mean, obviously, to lose a game on a 50-yard field goal as time expires is heartbreaking for the fans in attendance and the team on the field. But honestly, I don't think that the Phoenix have a lot to be mad about that game. I mean, obviously, it hurts to lose in that fashion. But if you look at the positives, I mean, Davis Cheek was back. After his knee injury in last October, he looked fantastic. I mean, throwing for over 200 yards and a touchdown, really being the cog in that offense that had it going for three scoring drives. He was behind a young offensive line that struggled, and he was sacked about five times. But that's something that can only get better as the team gets confidence down the road. But the biggest thing was that defense. I was really, really excited about what the defense showed out there on Saturday. I mean, you're talking about a young team that lost Warren Messer, very young in the linebacking core, and only have a couple veterans up front and in the secondary. They held a high-powered A&T team to only three touchdowns. I mean, in the course of a game, that's pretty impressive. And really, if the only thing between, you know, an offense that went 10-2 last year for the Bulldogs and a new Phoenix defense was a field goal in the last minute, I think that's a lot for the defense to hang their hats on.
Very close defeat there. What's morale looking like for tomorrow's game?
Like I'm saying, I mean, there's a lot to be proud of in that game, and there's a lot to move on and build off of. When I was talking to Davis Cheek after the game there on Saturday, he was saying that the biggest thing he was looking forward to in this game is that home crowd, that home energy.
The fan support, it's huge. It means more to us than everyone realizes, so.
And I feel like no matter where you are in a football season, no matter what your record shows, being out there in front of your home crowd can energize any team.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, Mackenzie.
Subscribe to ENN Radio on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And when we're not on the air, check out our website, elonnewsnetwork.com. And follow us on social media at Elon News Network. Talk to you next week.